Hello and welcome to HIV Matters podcast. My name is Michelle Croston, and as your host, I will be facilitating interesting conversations with leading experts in the field of HIV care. The conversations will be centred around exploring ways to improve quality of life for people living with HIV. Throughout my career, I've always had a keen interest in any initiatives to improve outcomes for people living with HIV, which has led me to work with a variety of different organisations, with different healthcare professionals and activists. Here at HIV Matters, we hope to use our unique perspectives and platforms to improve knowledge and understanding with regards to HIV. In order to do this, we will engage in conversations with people living with HIV, people who have worked in the HIV sector, and sometimes a mixture of both. We hope you enjoy the episode, and if you have any ideas or questions on this or future episodes, please contact us at hello@hivmatters.co.uk. You can also follow us on Instagram at HIV Matters Podcast, or visit our website at www.hivmatterspodcast.co.uk. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and comment on our show. So today I'm being joined on the HIV Matters podcast by Graham Lavery. I'm delighted to welcome Graham to today's episode of HIV Matters, where we're going to get a little bit more insight into what it means to be living with autism and HIV. So without further ado, I'm going to pass you over to Graham, who's going to kindly introduce himself.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for the invitation for joining the podcast. So my name's Graham. I've been living with HIV for 12 years. I was diagnosed when I was at university back in 2013, but I acquired it the year before, just before the start of 2013. I'd been away on holiday and, you know, one thing or another, and come home with more than I bargained for, so I've got a nice permanent souvenir. I've been involved in HIV campaign and activism, doing public speaking, being trained with Positively UK as a peer mentor, which has been fab. But the introduction of autism into the mix of things has been really interesting. So last year I helped set up Merseyside's first LGBTQ plus support service for autistic adults. So I'm busy with that at the moment. We've got another session this evening. This will be our 8th one. So that's a bit about me up to now, what we're up to. And
brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing that and sharing your journey with us today. And kind of thank you so much for coming on to talk about kind of autism. And I'm just wondering, you mentioned about kind of your work so far, but what led you to become an activist, I guess, in HIV care?
I can remember back to when I was diagnosed, and it kind of highlighted a lot of the misinformation I had about myself and my understanding about HIV, and it was quite prejudiced. It was quite it wasn't the best way of maybe thinking about somebody with HIV. And then I believe that when I was then diagnosed, it highlighted those internalized issues. So when I realized that this is what I'm going to experience from other people, that getting involved with Sahir House, which is Merseyside's HIV charity, was a way of not only accessing services, but becoming a volunteer, which means I could give back. And I think through that journey, I was encouraged and was mentored in finding my voice to speak up about living with HIV. And it just helped put a lot of what my issues were into perspective and be able to deal with them and, you know, learn from them and grow and be able to help and support other people through their journey. So I think to answer your question about why did he become an activist, it's because there's so many other people who don't have a voice, and by speaking up you help others, and if it can have some sort of impact slightly that somebody else lived a better life because somebody else has got a better understanding, then you've succeeded, really. So I hope that's the magic that it's spreading.
Thank you. Yeah, it is definitely the magic you are spreading, right? And which takes me quite nicely onto our next question. So you kindly presented at the National HIV Nurses Association last year, and I remember quite a few people coming up to me just sharing how kind of inspiring your talk was and kind of how much it informed their care. So I'm just wondering, for our listeners, are you able to just give us a little bit of an overview of the presentation you gave, please?
Yes, certainly. So the first 5 minutes were absolutely like tried to wing it. I hadn't done any talking for a while, mostly because of COVID and all services sort of like picking up services again, and you know, this, that and the other. And when the opportunity came to speak at the conference, I thought, I know enough how to pull this one together. So I've been so used to talking about HIV. This was like, talk about autism and HIV. And I was like, I don't know how to handle this at all. So I just thought like, I'd be able to talk quite well. But no, it was good because The point that I needed to make was really what it was about. So I just kind of I got my proper wings and was able to go with it then. So from my experience, post-diagnostic of receiving an autism spectrum condition diagnosis, is that there isn't any specific LGBTQ plus support for individuals. What people may not realize is that if you receive a diagnosis, is that you're six to seven more times likely to be LGBTQ plus and or have gender identity issues. So these are very specific needs to a already marginalized group that, having a learning disability or a neurological condition, being socializing is not very good neither. I'm sorry, that's going off subject a little bit, but it was just to highlight some of the issues that are more challenging for people with autism within the gay community. But my what my presentation ultimately was about was, if of the nurses or clinicians, would they suspect that one of their gay males, or you know, a man who has sex with man, if they're exhibiting certain symptoms or signs that they could have autism, and would that clinician have the confidence to be able to address that with somebody? Because I just thought, if you've got a certain statistic of men who are gay or could be more likely to have autism, and I think some of the social problems that gay men face anyway, with you know, worsened mental health or drinking and drugs, or you know, the kind of sex that they're having, there could be reasons, and relationship issues, mental health, learning, jobs, friendships. So having that bigger picture and saying, I can see this, I've seen this patient on more than several occasions, they're telling me the same thing, and then I've asked some leading questions around education or how are you in the work environment or whatever, it could be a way of nurses having access to that demographic to advise them of the pathways to receiving an autism diagnosis. So the sort of takeaway was just encouraging staff, clinicians to be more autism aware, you know, that it's not what we stereotypically think about as somebody in a wheelchair with a crash helmet and being a nuisance in the Asda when your mum's shopping or something. It's, you know, it's, you know, I'm functional and I've got my own mind, and, you know, I try to lead as best a life as I can, because it's not disabling. It's enabled me now to do more and be more in tune about who I am as a person. So I know I'm helpful it's been to have that. So the conference was great, because I appreciate the outreach of people like yourself, Michelle, and your colleagues that had been, to see somebody new, I suppose, to talk about something that a lot of us don't really know, because it could be either a taboo or, you know, probably don't have that language. I'm trying to find language all the time when I'm talking to service providers, and I'm like, oh, it's difficult, but then you have to be honest and just wing it as much as you can, as long as it gets things done and there's results.
Thank you so much for sharing that overview. And I think something that's kind of lots of things resonate with hearing your kind of overview of the conference presentation. But I think mainly as well, thinking about, like you said, having the confidence to say, actually, is there something else going on here for you? And would maybe a referral to somebody to explore your needs? Diversity approach be a good idea, but also kind of thinking about post-diagnostic support. And I know you mentioned you've started a support group around that. Is there anything I'm thinking of myself and seeing a few patients in clinic lately who are saying, you know, I think I may have autism, I'm pursuing a diagnosis. Is there anything practically that I could do as a nurse to help with making their consultation better?
The Autism Society Association, there's, I'm just looking online now, there is quite a lot of organisations who, depending on where, I mean, you're in Manchester, aren't you? So I think to answer your question practically, there's loads of stuff out there, but a lot of it is not specific. It can just be more about the stereotypes of more of like the clinician sort of terms. So, you know, one person may stim, whereas I don't see when I stim, and I didn't realize I did stim. So it's quite confusing. And if you've got no one to speak to about that, because there's no access to that kind of service, it's kind of like trying to figure it out on your own. The practical side of stuff would be, you know, trying to see what support is in the area. A lot of the organisations will say that you don't actually need a formal diagnosis to access their support either. So you could say that you are following the pathways, you're waiting for a diagnosis, and you were advised to go and join a support group in that preparation for then you receiving your diagnosis. So that's, don't be afraid to actually just say, can I come along? Because I really need help understanding whether this is true for me or whether I do have autism. I'd say there's a lot of stuff that you can watch on YouTube as well. A tremendous amount. There's loads of TED Talks. It talks about the neuroscience. It talks about the social stuff, the psychology. Lots of stuff about, 100 things about Asperger's that people didn't know about, or, you know, so there's a lot of stuff there, and it's about sifting through it. I think the worst one to try and make heads or tails of is ADHD, because I'm on the waiting list for that, but whilst I've been doing some self-care, which again is another thing surrounding how to better manage ourselves and our symptoms and whatnot, is I wanted to know a little bit more about I suppose like therapy or exercises that I could do myself that could be practical. So whether that was breaking things down, looking at how I structure things, how much time I spend socializing, it could be practicing small talk, it could be you know, doing a couple of things outside what I'm interested in. So it's good to challenge yourself. I mean, that's just me personally, but I think reading up about autism, what kind of support there is, but also it really depends on what you want your diagnosis for as well. You know, I mean, I'm 40 next year, and I got mine like October 2022. You know, I don't work because of my health, and my autism's now a big factor of that, but it doesn't stop me doing my voluntary work, and it certainly doesn't stop me. I know what my limits are, and I know that from doing like the practical stuff. And whether you'd look at it as like CBT maybe, or MBT, you know, like mentalization behavioral therapy. So I think if you look at any of the exercises around that, it can be really helpful to try and process why we burn out, why we struggle in social situations. I suppose just learning about whether the symptoms of autism, if you were talking to one of your patients and you were saying, like, maybe it'd be good to familiarize yourself with what autism is, and because these are some of the big things, and just maybe jot down some answers to what those symptoms are. Like, can you think of a time when this has happened? Can you think of a time when that's happened? How has it made you feel? You know, and at least then you're creating some sort of log or diary then of those things, which could be really helpful when having the assessment. So I think if there's other pathways for like getting a diagnosis, which is either through specifically the care team in your area, speaking to your GP, and you can also do a referral privately as well. So I think there's like your HIV audience that we're talking to, but then for me, being if any of those people are LGBTQ+, is then looking for what kind of support there is around. Are there any groups, any support groups? Are there any other voluntary led groups? Because mostly with the lack of money or whatnot for post diagnostic services, a lot of the groups that I found are actually voluntary run. So a lot of it is not going to be funded, and the dedication from voluntary groups is just phenomenal, and being able to unfortunately fill the gap. So a lot of it is really more community-based support, which is great.
So thank you so much for sharing that. And I think kind of thinking about the role of the nurse or the HIV team within that is kind of thinking about raising that as an awareness, and also signposting people onto potential support, and like you've just mentioned, finding out what support is available, and thinking about that kind of what you've just talked about, that intersectionality of the different identities that we have and what support we need for that as well.
Yeah, totally.
So you've mentioned a few times, Graham, this kind of, you know, we're all human beings and we're all in a world that is often sometimes very cruel. And we as much as we think we're not subject to stereotypes, we can stereotype people. And, you know, you mentioned about the person in Asda, and, you know, I had an uncomfortable smile at that because I knew exactly what you meant with that. So I'm just wondering, for our listeners, are you able to explain a little bit about kind of what is neurodiversity?
So neurodiversity covers all neurological conditions, whether it's somebody who's had a stroke, dementia, Parkinson's disease. Oh my, I've run out of words. Yes. I feel like I'm in an exam. Yeah. So, and then obviously the goodies that I'm more affiliated with is autism and ADHD. You know, dyslexia is a neurological condition as well. So it covers quite a whole range of anything to do with like the nerves and obviously if it affects your brain and your ability to like move, interact, learn, listen, you know, it covers quite a whole spectrum of things.
So that was amazing. A great overview of kind of what this all-compassing word means. And I think, you know, we're hearing this word bandied about a lot within different communities, within the media, within social media. So it's really good that you kind of just said it's a big term, which is open to different interpretations as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I only realised that that's what neurodiversity meant. And I feel really stupid because I'm like one of the group. You know, China is just for other people, neurodiverse people. And I just generally thought it just covered people with autism. But we've got the Brain Charity in Liverpool. I've just recently engaged with them. And when I was on the phone waiting to be spoken to, I was just going through stuff and I was reading about the charity and I was like, oh my God, neurodiversity means like all neurological conditions, not just autism. And I'm like, you idiot. Oh, don't tell anyone. But now I have.
I'm glad you was open and shared that. I think despite being a nurse, a very senior nurse, I, for a long time, was a little bit unsure what this word meant. And I think, you know, it's good to share that awareness, isn't it? So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's no different than, you know, some of the phrase and terminology and the language that I've had to learn and develop to make my own. So I'm more confident when I talk about HIV. So you've really caught me at the very start and infancy of, like, me trying to figure out how to talk better about autism and certain words, and it's a bit of a pickle. It's interesting because it's not HIV, you know, and that's what I've been doing for 10 years and now I'm doing something else.
No, you're learning something differently. So with that in mind, and you know, it is like you say, it's a whole different spectrum. We've just talked about kind of some of the things around this. So why do you think these issues are important to have conversations around?
I think one of the most staggering difficulties is that there is such an under-supported minority or a fringe group of a minority of a minority that is totally neglected on the basis that society and everything that we do is geared towards neurotypical ways, understanding how we consume information, how we understand, like how to, you know, having those skills and ability to live your life normally and to fit in and go to work, have a job, get married, kids, to a mortgage and a goldfish and all that. So with historically with some of the challenges of being LGBTQ+, more risk of being homeless, drug use, alcohol, severe mental health problems. I can't remember if I just said homelessness or, you know, a chance of being unemployed. Now, imagine if you've got somebody with autism who is not being supported and may not be able to look after themselves and is not getting the right support, i.e. can't go out and socialise with other gays or other people because of their autism, or to go to the shops and stuff. So
yeah, I'm just wondering why you think having conversations around autism, neurodiversity is important.
Yeah, so it's about inclusion, isn't it? Because, you know, I know from seeing people who are neurodiverse being in social situations with people that are presenting as being neurotypical, so meaning that they don't have any impairment from a neurological condition. So when there's certain levels of conversation and it's not geared around or inclusive for somebody who may just look awkward, I think educating people about what autism is and what it isn't and how to better support the people that you know It makes somebody feel more inclusive, and it makes somebody feel visible and heard. And I think that's why it's important, is that somebody who's socially different, and most people wouldn't have the compassion and the empathy to take the time and go, are you all right? And it's like, I'm just finding this really overwhelming. Or, you know, it's sort of like going, I recognize that in something. And then if you knew enough about autism to ask some more questions, you go, have you ever thought you've got autism? That's the kind of thing that I'm hoping for in that dialogue with HIV nurses from the conference and from this as well, is that if you could, it's just having that training and understanding can make it a tremendous difference to somebody's to themselves, to them as a person, because a lot of them do live in isolation because they can't go out and socialize normally as what's expected. I mean, look at most bars are not disabled accessible, you know. So as much as they try to be, it's not that it's done on purpose, it's just some venues are not accessible. And it's this way of, like, if you think about somebody with autism, if they may have big difficulties, they want to socialize, but they can't because the venues are not geared towards having sensory, are not particularly sensory friendly. I mean, why you'd want to go and socialize at 10 o'clock at night in a nightclub, I don't know, but besides the point, you know, I think the more people have awareness, you know, it will disseminate, it will spread out, and, you know, there will be less stigma, less information, misinformation, less discrimination. And if it can make people feel more included and included in things, then that's great. As long as it puts a smile on someone's face.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So thinking about if you could go back in time to a younger version of yourself, is there any advice that you may give based on what you know?
Yeah, keep calm. Yeah. Yeah, keep calm and don't panic.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great motto. Make sure you meet a younger me to tell me that as well. Yeah,
like don't lose your bottle, because like it is going to be really difficult. But I took part in a photography exhibition project last year, and it was about the many faces of HIV. So this was at the Museum of Liverpool. What this has got to do with your question about my younger self was because from diagnosis to like where I am now has been really difficult. And it was so lovely that last year was my first acknowledgement that I'm in such a better place, and that it's actually probably the best part of my life so far. So that was so wonderful to like know that. Of all the difficulties, if I could tell myself younger to say what in store it would be, there is going to be a time in your life where things are going to be perfectly balanced, and we'll have few worries, and all of the stuff that's happened will just be down to life experience that you can use to help other people with. So I would definitely say don't panic. Carry on and keep calm and don't lose your bottle, because things will get better.
Thank you. That's such an inspirational thing to think about. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
That's okay.
So before we get to know you a little bit better, I'm just wondering, you've mentioned about your support group. That sounds like a full-time job in itself, but are you able to share with your listeners any projects that you're currently working on or developing?
Yeah, so having access to some wonderful neurodiverse individuals, a lot of them are very creative and crafty. So because I'm a textile artist, my degree's in graphic arts, and then I got involved with the NAMES Project Memorial Quilt for, the AIDS Memorial Project, been involved in that. So I was so super shocked when I found out that a lot of autistics or neurodiverse people actually like crocheting. So what we're trying to do at the moment is set up a basically an inclusive LGBTQ plus crafters group, and with an emphasis on the ones that we've got from the autism circle who want to come and join in and craft and stuff. So my kind of hope is that if we can get some funding from like the Arts Council, and that we can do an exhibition highlighting queer crafters within the community, and just try to show the neurodiverse side of it as well, based on the statistics to say this is what neurodiverse creative people get up to, and I'll be fabulous. So that's my that's my next project.
Oh well, that sounds fabulous. I can't wait to see that. Sign you up for tickets. It sounds wonderful.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Oh yeah, I've got really good, do you know what? It can sound quite big, but like all big, that the bigness will come hopefully later on. But at the moment, the most important thing, which is always a driving factor in whatever I try to do, is that it's to think of the person. Mm-hmm. It's to think of what's important and what can we do for that person now, as simple as it is. And then that's when it's to build the foundation of what we can then add to it. So, yeah, and that means, like, getting money. We want money. Everybody wants money to do things. I'm really enthusiastic about that. It'll start off nice and simple, but you know, the kind of it shouldn't be difficult really to do something you're passionate about. And if you can brainwash other people to get on board with that, then you work some good magic, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds absolutely wonderful and so impactful.
Oh, thank you.
So moving on to getting to know you a little bit better, I know you've been really generous sharing lots of insights into yourself throughout the podcast, but this is equally as much fun for me as well. So can you share with our listeners something you do as part of your self-care?
Yeah, so that's something that has taken a really long time, because having to manage chronic fatigue syndrome, autism and mental health, and also my diet as well, because of my HIV, it's trying to find this great balance, isn't it, between, you know, if I was a sim from the game, and you've got all the different levels, and you need to top up that one, that's what it's like. I think that's what self-care, if it was on a graph, or had infographics or something, I think that's how we'd have to look at, say, relaxation, needs improving, the stress levels are too high, what can you do to reduce them? So I think in terms of self-care, I try to break down what I need to make that work as a whole. So knowing when I need to lubricate my creativity, I need to go and do some yoga, or when I need more energy, I have to think about what food that I'm having, or is there any other gentle exercise that can give me a little bit more energy on top of, say, doing like a bit of cardio, then going for walks, reading's really good. And obviously, like, my main passion is doing textile artwork. But I try to, managing my autism, trying to maintain all of that is really super hard work. Like, it's more hard work than it would be potentially for somebody else without having my own comorbidities, which are so they're complex, and to balance them has taken a long time. And that, Michelle, that involved like accessing therapy as well. So the chronic fatigue team was working with two occupational therapists, doing psychological therapy as well around mental health. Then going on to realizing that I've got autism as contributing factors of the mental health. So of all of the support is then going, what would I like to do? How can I diversify my time? And how much of energy do I give to those things to keep it like for fulfillment. So yeah, it's even if it's just you're not able to do much, it's just doing something. If you know you've got to do something, go do something else. You know, it's like if you think too much about the thing it is you're supposed to do, because it's like it's overwhelming. Go and do something else, and then come back to it. That usually tricks me out of knocks me out of putting the energy into something and doing that commitment thing. But there's so much information on the internet, or even just speaking to like clinicians, is about self-care. What does that mean for the person? It can also mean self-care for me also involves pruning out the toxicity that I've had from previous relationships and friendships. So my self-care is knowing how to respect my boundaries with what my self-worth is. So that's helped quite a lot, because I appreciate that I'm sure I'm not the only person with HIV who's got mental health problems, potentially, not like stigmatizing or like stereotyping, but we can find it really challenging to go out, or can be very vulnerable. So I think as part of my continuing self-care is limiting what kind of social interaction I have with people without putting myself under any pressure to be expected to be like that. And I think because of the autism, not putting myself under any pressure or putting myself down that I'm not doing like what other people are doing, that I'm discovering that I'm my own person. So during that journey, is making sure that when we're running the group and for myself, is that it's putting things in place that if I'm feeling a bit wobbly, I know I can talk to somebody, that it's okay to phone X, Y, and Z if you need that stability to stabilize, like if you're having some mental health issues. Knowing that there's alternative things that you can do if you feel in a certain way. Paint, you know, go play with the cat, chuck a pan of water at the pigeons, I don't know, be creative.
Oh wow, thanks for that. And the pigeon lovers listening, we really won't be throwing water. But yeah, not only joking. But yeah, no, that's great. I really loved how you described that kind of lots of different ways to look after yourself as well. And that actually, that's part of being human, isn't it? That
it is, yeah.
We've got so many different parts of us. And I loved your analogy of the sim. As well, because actually, do we check in and say what do I need? Because actually, sometimes my self care can actually be self sabotage. So I might say, no, I need to rest, but actually, I'm just avoiding doing stuff. So it's kind of, I really liked your honestness about kind of, or your honesty, because that honesty, that word wasn't even a real word, but honesty around kind of what we do. But so thank you for that. You mentioned reading, so can you share with us a book that you're reading at the moment?
Oh, wow. I can't. I can tell you what it's about, but I don't know what the title of the book is about. So, yeah, I feel so bad, because it just shows how incredibly lazy and uncommitted I am to reading. But I got quite a lot of books at Christmas, which I was so pleased about. A couple of them were Thames and Hudson books, and they were about Louis Vuitton, Ed St. Laurent, and the other one's about Vivienne Westwood, about fashion, which is really interesting. But I just like looking at the pictures, so I mean, it's very easy. The other book, which my mum got me, which I will get round to reading. So I've got a cat, his name's Freddy. He's a blue mitted ragdoll, and he's technically, his birth certificate says Freddy the Fabulous, as he's such named after Mr. Mercury, who's my idol. So everybody knows that I've got an absolute love for cats. And my mum got me this book, and it's about a cat that survived the Titanic. So that is on my bedside dresser, and a book about quantum mechanics. Just to be different.
Oh, I love that. I love that, and I will definitely be chatting to you about that book.
I just thought, like, oh, the adventures of some famous cat on a boat that's actually survived the Titanic, and from the cat's perspective, I thought that actually sounds like the it just sounds really good. Yeah, you know, why not?
Yeah, 100%, I'm totally with you. And finally, our last question to you. This is the magic wand question. So if time, money and resources weren't an issue, what would you like to change or seen done differently?
Do you know, that's a really good question. Because to me, that would be like burn my head out. But we were talking about something last night with at my friend's. We were having food and we were discussing about our teenagers when they come out of school or previously socially apt with the experience to understand their emotions and to understand relationships and the kind of things that they're going to face in the real world, like, you know, paying bills, you know, being in touch with our emotions, boundaries, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, as far as I'm aware, if I could do anything differently, imagine how great it would be to put, you know, more discussion about sexual health, more discussion about marriage, relationships, different families, sexuality, how to explore, how to have healthy friendships and how to, you know, more about safety online. And I just thought, like, you know, if there was a magic wand, I think it would be brilliant to introduce more of practical life. You know, if it was an exercise book about how to be, what happens after school and how to be an adult and how to blag a free Mackey's burger or something as an adult, you know, more tips and more. That would be fabulous, but we don't get that. It's like you just literally do your qualifications, you're kicked out, and it's whatever's expected of you from your family, and you kind of think swim or sink. Mm-hmm. So I think for the people that, you know, even neurodiverse people as well, is that if there was more support for children going through school in better preparation for the real world, that's the change that I'd like to see. Because, you know, imagine may sound a bit grim to mention this, but, you know, if there's people with severe mental health problems that have didn't get the right support, or angry men, and, you know, domestic violence and stuff like that, you know, if there was ways of sort of, I think, just giving people more understanding of themselves and how to be respectful of people. So there was that, and I just wish things were better overall for everybody. I couldn't be too specific, because that would be unfair.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that, what a lovely thought that is, because how do we negotiate relationships? How do we, like you say, get healthy friendships, healthy relationships? How do we negotiate our needs? And yeah, that those life hacks about how do you get yourself out of something? And how to blag something. As well,
because I just thought, like, you know, I didn't get diagnosed with autism until, as I say, like 2023, and the lack of support or awareness of autism in school at that time didn't exist. And I'm also from a generation when Section 28 was still highly in effect. So we also got no support around our sexual identity when we were at school, and had quite a difficult time. So when you kind of, I say handicap, but, like, you know, again, like, life isn't sort of geared around being inclusive of the LGBT community. And then the other side is that, like, if you've not been able to understand the life lessons that you're supposed to have got from school, and then you're going into the same situation. That's why autism awareness is really important. So I suppose feeding into that, I'd have to add something onto the not being specific, but I just wish there was more support, more specific support for people with learning difficulties at school, where that they could be of benefit in giving them a better opportunity to fit in the workplace and not be hindered by not understanding stuff like the way other people do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and thoughts with us today, Graeme. It's been an absolute pleasure sharing this time with us today.
Oh, thanks, Michelle. Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to today's guest and to you for listening to this episode of HIV Matters. I don't know if you're anything like me and are busy writing down the lovely book suggestions made in our show. That's why HIV Matters have teamed up with bookshop.org to bring all these fantastic books to you in one unique place. To find out more about this and how to access the bookstore, please check out today's show descriptions. Today's edition of HIV Matters has been brought to you via an unrestricted educational grant from Vive Healthcare and Gilead Sciences. Gilead and Vive have had no input into guests or topics. HIV Matters is the official podcast of the National HIV Nurses Association. For more information about the National HIV Nurses Association, head over to www.nivna.org. Thanks again for listening to our show. We hope to see you next time, and together we can make a difference.